9:31, Boker Tov, everybody. We are at Perek Beit, Mishnah 9, Mishnah 10, in at least my cycle. We discussed already, and some of the Siddur and the Mishnah, sometimes the exact Mishnayot don't correspond with each other, but we're talking about the five students of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And last week we discussed the tragic stories of the Talmud that we were just alluding to a moment ago before we started about the rabbinic debate. And we discussed last week how Rav Elazar ben Arach went to enjoy life and he forgot all the Torah that he knew, even though according to one opinion, he was greater than every other rabbi combined. He was a Mayan HaMikaber, an overflowing spring of water, a well that always refreshes and gives new Torah insights. And we discussed last week the debate, what's more important, a good memory, the guy who knows all of Torah, or the guy who knows a little bit less, but is more analytical, is able to deduce things. That's the debate that went on. That was when Rav Chaim Soloveitchik introduced his new method of Talmud. So people liked it. One of the reasons that you didn't have to know as much. It was based on analysis. It wasn't based on so much thinking, you know, this piece of Talmud, that piece of Talmud. And I mentioned Rav Lichtenstein's comment that while in the Talmud, it says that having a great memory, what we call a Sinai, one who knows everything. He knows the entire Torah. That's more important than the person who's innovative and analytical, because sort of the wheat, what you need, the basic bread, as the Talmud says, is the person who knows everything. What Rav Lichtenstein and others say is today that's no longer true, because today you don't need to know anything. You just go to the Bar Ilan, you know, website or whatever their shoot website, or you go to all these, you know, everything is on computer. You don't have to know anything. I mean, I say that half joking, but half seriously. You know, you can Rabbi Google has all the information you need. So today, what's more important is not so much the getting information. Of course, it's still very important, but it's the analysis, because the information is there for us. We don't have to worry. But when the oral Torah was actually given orally and it wasn't written down, and we know things were forgotten. Much of Torah was forgotten. And some of the debates in the Talmud are debates about what happened, not about conceptual debates. Conceptual debates, this one can be right, that one can be right. But when they're arguing on historical facts, and that happened because you had an oral transmission, broken telephone. So that was the debate. Okay, that's pretty much a review of last week. Let's start Mishnah Tet. Amar Lahem, Su Uru. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai tells his five great students, go out and tell us, what is the straight path that a person shall take? So I just found the expression su'u uru'u, say omad. Like that's what popped into my mind by the Haggadah, go out and learn. In other words, it's not obvious. You have to go out and you have to sort of analyze what's the derech yishara. Now that's an interesting word, and I think it came up, and we discussed it a little bit, the first Mishnah and the second parak, Rebbe Omer, ezu derech yishara. What's the straight path that a person should dig for themselves? We're going to have right after Tisha B'Av in Parshat Batchanan, you read the mitzvah, Basita Hayashar Bahatov, to do the straight and the good. And it's a very unclear term. What does it mean to do the straight and the good? So we mentioned, I believe, that Yashar generally refers to mitzvot between man and man. It basically, on that verse, Basita Yashar Bahatov, the Ramban has his comment that's the mitzvah of lifni mishur hadin. It's to command you to do more than the law requires. The law requires X, but we know the law isn't always straight. The law sometimes, because of a particular circumstance, legalities, anybody who deals with the law knows that the law can work. If it's a good law, it can work 95% of the time. But 5% of the time, the law is very harsh and very very hurtful to people. And so sometimes you have to act lifnim mishur hadin, before the straightness of the law. But the derech yishara, that's what our sages liked. How to get along with people. We're coming up to Tisha B'Av. And so the Netziv has his famous introduction on Sefer Bereshit, where he discusses, I think I also mentioned this, Sefer HaYashar, the book of the straight. That's the greatness of the Avot, of how they got along with people, Avram praying for Sodom, as opposed to the Jews in the Second Temple period, who were always fighting. And that's, I always say, is the Achilles heel, the cancer of the Jewish people, is the infighting that we have, and it holds us back way too often. But that's so the Derech Yisharaz, how to get along well with people. As we'll see from the answers. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ayin tova, you have to have a good eye. So what does it mean to have a good eye? I didn't know a good eye. This is not a medical term. This is a moral term. So the Bartonur explains, a good eye means not to get angry at people. A good eye, we all instinctively know it. It's how you look at, but you can give somebody a glare and give somebody a glance, and that's all you have to do. And that's you destroy the person. You know that you can talk Lashon Hara. You don't have to speak to talk Lashon Hara. You can give an expression, a facial expression, move your nose, give a person a look. So Aimra means how you look at people. Bartonur says not to get angry. We know that anger is not a good thing. There's a debate. Can a Torah scholar ever get angry? Is a Torah scholar allowed to get angry at people for not doing what they're supposed to do? So many say maybe he can feign anger. He's never allowed to get angry. We know this was, if I want to use the term Achilles heel again, Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll get to that comment in a second. Moshe Rabbeinu had a temper. That's and it cost him, according to, you know, what was his sin of hitting the rock? So some say he was getting mad at the Jew, not hitting the rock. God told him to take the staff. It was when he said, Shimuna Hamorim, he got mad at the people. Anger is a terrible thing. I don't know. I mean, are people, is anybody familiar with the unbelievable story that Tiferet Yisrael quotes at the end of Kiddushin on the history of Moshe Rabbeinu? I'm just curious, anybody heard the story? The story is so powerful, it was censored out of some of the editions. This is, what I use, this is, I think I've shown this before, maybe not. This is the classic old style edition of the Mishnah. Before Pinchas Kehati, the banker in Israel, came along and wrote a modern, fantastic commentary on the Mishnah. So anybody who, if you know absolutely nothing, but you know Hebrew, and today Kati is actually translated to English. So you don't have to know anything. Every introduction has every Mishnah has an introduction, background. So the Kati put everybody else in a sense out of business. But in on a certain level, that's very nice. But you still, I think it's always good to look at the classic commentaries themselves that he will sometimes summarize. So, I quote those who've been here. I quote the Tiferet Yisrael a lot. Yisrael, Lifshitz, 19th century, the one who praises, Jenner as one of the most amazing people who ever lived, because the founder of the smallpox vaccine, when it talks about how praiseworthy are people created in the image of God. So he talks about Jenner on Gutenberg, the invention of the printing press. He had a lot of interesting things. He was a quote unquote, a little modern, but he's printed in the classic editions. To make it to the classic edition mission, you got to be, in the upper league. So he has in the end of Kiddushin, there's only one Mishnah that I'm aware of in the entire Talmud, about 4,200 Mishnayot. So there's only one Mishnah that talks a little bit about what a person should do for a career, what job should a person have? Because for a simple reason, because the Torah couldn't care less. It's irrelevant what job you have. Whatever job you have to do it in a moral way. The Torah doesn't tell you what to do. The Torah tells you whatever you do, do it with ethics and morality and integrity, but every person should do what they want to do. Every person develops their own talent. Torah doesn't tell us who we should marry, where we should live, what houses we should do, with very, rare exceptions. But so there's very little about what a person should do with their in terms of a career. The last Mishnah in Kiddushin, that's the, sometimes you'll hear it at a Siyum. So there the Mishnah goes into well, people who are butchers are the partners of Amalek, and because they're violent, they want to see blood, and Tov Shebarofim Gehenem, the best of the doctors go to Gehenem. That's a fascinating, statement. What it exactly means? We love doctors. Our tradition loves doctors. I mean, we personally. Rafori Yopei, it's a mitzvah. So what does the Mishnah mean? Okay, not maybe we'll have to do that another time. So on that Mishnah, the Tiferet Yisrael has like a mind-blowing story. He quotes a legend. Some historians say other traditions have a similar legend. Moshe Rabbeinu. If I remember the story, I hope I got most of the details right, that when the Jewish people left Egypt. So one of the kings, you know, here, wow, Moshe, you know, by Yishmael Yitro, the Torah tells us why did Yitro was so amazed by everything he heard that had happened. You know, the nation, Shamu Amin Yirgazun, we say that in the Shirat Hayam, the nations of the world heard, you know, it was very powerful. The whole world knew what was going on. The Torah, the splitting of the sea, wow, people got out of Egypt. That never happened before in history. So everybody was blown away with what's going on. Who is the God of Israel? So this king wanted to know who this Moshe was. So he sent his, I don't know what the word is, not a cartographer, a guy who, to draw a picture of Moshe. And then they would analyze the picture and see like what type of person, you know, we do that. You know, you look at the person by analyzing their facial features. Can tell a little about them. So he sends these people, they come back to the king, and the people look at it and they say, this person, this is the most evil person. He's conceited and self-centered and awful things. And the people say, that's impossible. This is, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, the person who got the Torah from God, who led out the Jewish people. And there was a whole fight, how can it be? So the king decides he's going to go for himself. You can tell it's not exactly like, it's not in the Chumash here. So, but the king goes by himself and to see Moshe, and he looks, and Moshe, it's the guys who drew the picture, drew it exactly as Moshe looked. It was a great portrait. So he goes to Moshe, gets a meeting with Moshe, says, Moshe, I don't understand. According to this picture, you're supposed to be evil, terrible person. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, correct, that's me. That's me. But I worked really, really hard. I worked really, really hard. And I overcame, I have a propensity for anger and I have a temper and I have all these terrible traits. And because, you know, but I worked really hard to come who I am. So that's the story he quotes. And again, depending on your, I think it's very, very, very beautiful story. It's a very powerful story. Our everybody's human in our tradition. And right. And like, you can only be good if you can be bad. Like we've mentioned that idea many times, you know, Newton's third law of motion. In order for something to have a reaction, you have to have an action. In order, the greater the power for good, the greater the power for evil. They go hand in hand. So someone who can be great can be evil. That they absolutely, when the Talmud says the grandchildren of Haman studied Torah in Bnei Brak, that's exactly what they mean. It takes a Haman. Haman's grandchildren can become, Haman himself can become great. If you, the makom shebalei tshuva amdim, the reason a bal tshuva is greater than a person who never sinned is because the sin, when you sink lower, you can raise higher. So that's a very powerful, and I think it's a very true idea. People who are sort of are neutral, are par, you know, so they're not great, they're not bad. But greatness can, that's why we were alluding to before the class. Torah is super powerful. So when rabbis argue, it can be horrendous. They can do terrible things because of the power to do good, the power to do evil. So that story, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Like I mentioned, Dr. Schneur Lyman, really one of the, you know, world's expert Jewish, you know, scholars, a tremendous, you know, Talmud Chacham. So I think I first heard the story from him, and it's printed in my Mishnah. It is printed, but he did say, depending on the volume of the Mishnah, it was taken out by certain people. Certain people, again, love that story because, again, it's all attitude. But you see for sure that Moshe Rabbeinu had traces of anger. And that's clear in the Torah. Even the fact when, even if he was 100% right, the first thing we know about Moshe Rabbeinu is he kills an Egyptian. So, but that anger cost him. That anger cost him. And anyway, so that's how the Bartanura explains that an ayin ra'ah it is to have anger. The more traditional interpretation of an ayin ra'ah is not to be jealous of other people. Don't look down on other people, this success of other people. Don't be jealous, be happy. That's how it's normally translated in Ayin Tova. It's interesting that the Tiferet Yisrael, as we're going to see, he does a lot of this. He's going to compare. You're going to say, remember, Rav Gamliel, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai begins this discussion by saying, these are my five top students. Each one of these students had a great trait, right? So one was... he had a photographic memory. He was a chassid. Blessed is his mother. So Rebbe Lezer was the one who didn't forget anything. He was a cistern that never lost a drop of water. He is the signer, the one who knows everything. I don't know. I maybe somebody here can enlighten me. But he says that an ayin ra'ah, when a person gets angry, their memory goes. They forget things. I don't know. Is that I don't exactly know what that means, but I understand at the moment you forget things because you do things in rash, but I don't know how it means it on a general basis. But anyway, Ein Ra'a, Ein Tova, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yeshua Omer, Chaver Tov. So Rebbe Yeshua says the most important, and it's interesting, I wouldn't call a Chaver Tov a Derech Yishara. In other words, the question was, what is the path the person should choose? So a path the person choose, I should be kind, I should be charitable, I should be gracious, you know, I should, but I should have a good friend isn't something I do. In other words, Ezeh Derech Yishara, what is the straight path I should choose for my life? Having a good friend that sort of doesn't exactly fit, which is what I think, what the commentaries explain, it's not so much having a good friend you go out with, you know, and you party. A good friend means someone who'll give you mussar and criticize you. You have to have somebody who you can turn to, not only for a listening ear who'll hear out your problems, but somebody who will actually rebuke you. And we know the mitzvah of rebuke, I'll let somebody talk if they want. How's the mitzvah of rebuke mentioned in the Torah? What's the verse? It's one of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah. May not apply anymore. We'll discuss in a moment. But it's one of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah in chapter 19 in Vayikra, in Kedoshim, right before loving your neighbor as yourself and that beautiful thing, don't curse the deaf and don't put a stumbling block before the blind. Don't hate your brother in your heart. So it's the Torah says, and it repeats it. And I always think, I assume, in modern Hebrew means you have to prove. When you rebuke somebody, you don't say, oh, what you're doing is wrong. You have to prove to him why it's wrong. You think Shabbos is, a person should keep Shabbos. You don't yell Shabbos. You invite them for a Friday night meal and you tell them. You demonstrate to them. L'hochiach is to prove. Hochiach tochiach edamitecha. You have to rebuke somebody. And then the pasuk continues, lo tisa alav chet. You're not allowed to cause the sin. And Rashi has a famous comment, you're not allowed to embarrass somebody. Even while you rebuke them, you can't embarrass them. Otherwise, you are sinning. The Gemara already, I mentioned last week, Rav Moshe Feinstein's, you know, tshuva, that can a rabbi tell people not to talk for tkiyat shofar, since most people aren't going to listen. Well, and you're not allowed to rebuke people if you know they're not going to listen. So Rav Moshe says you can, because first of all, 1 out of 100 people are going to listen, Baruch Hashem. 1 out of 100 might listen. And number two, that's the job of the rabbi. Just like the laws of pikuach nefesh for a doctor are very different than the laws of pikuach nefesh for other people. Doctors have to put their life at risk. Soldiers, the Minchat Chinuch has a famous comment that the laws of Pikuach Nefesh don't apply to them. I don't want to get into the political aspect, but the Minchat Chinuch, not all agree with him. Rav Soloveitchik did not agree with this, but the Minchat Chinuch is of the opinion that when it comes to the mitzvah of capturing Israel, Pikuach Nefesh does not apply. Because the Torah says you're going to have to go to war to capture Israel. In a war, people die. So if the Torah tells us there's a mitzvah to capture Israel, it must mean you don't take into consideration pikuach nefesh. So that's the famous con. Many people follow that. They say, it's okay, we're going to keep territory. Who cares? We risk life. It's more important. Rav Soloveitchik, many others disagreed. It's true, the Torah says sometimes you have to go to war, but that doesn't mean if you can save life by not going to war, you don't go to war. But but we know clearly for a soldier, a firefighter, when you take that job, the laws of pikuach nefesh are going to change for a person. So the rabbi's job is to rebuke people. So his job in hochacha is different than anybody else's job. Other people don't do it. And the Talmud, 1800 years ago, and Erechin says that, I forget who was the person who said it, I don't know if there's anybody today who's capable of giving rebuke, because it's basically people who live in glass homes shouldn't throw stones. I'm going to tell you, remove this splinter from your eyes, and you're going to tell me, take the beam from your back. In other words, you do much worse than I do. And what the Talmud is saying is very correct. You can only give instructions if you follow them. I don't have to comment with what's going on in terms of the leadership who are giving instructions of how to live in COVID and what they do in their own lives. It's like, it makes me beyond angry. You know, they make pronouncements and they do the exact opposite. And I think, you have to give an example. So the Talmud says the mitzvah of hochacha doesn't apply. No one today is capable of properly rebuking somebody, which is why Rav Amital has a beautiful article that the mitzvah to, however it implies, to sort of look down upon other Jews who are sinners doesn't apply today, because nobody can be considered a sinner if they're not rebuked. And since nobody can give proper rebuke, I mean, that's sort of the old Tinok Shenishba argument, that it's not their fault. But it's more than they grew up in a culture. We're talking about anybody. We're talking people today. We don't know how to properly rebuke. But anyway, so that's... But that's what Rabbi Yoshua says. So the best thing to get is a friend. Obviously, you want a friend to rebuke you. That's the famous, famous story that I may mention. Once the Vilna Gaon went to the Maggid of Dubna, and he said, give me Musar. So he gave him a whole parable, because that's all the Maggid of Dubna used to do, or that's what he's famous for. But the bottom line is, he told the Vilna Gaon, that's great. You sit in the base medrash all day for 22 hours a day. Who cares? What the Vilna Gaon was a private person, had no communal position ever in his life. Was never a rabbi, was never a rosh yeshiva, was a private citizen supported by the community, who was recognized to be a super genius, brilliant. But he, that doesn't mean anything if you're not involved in the community. People want to hear Musar. So that's the Derech Yishara. If I'm going to be on a straight path, the best way to be on a straight path is to have a good friend. What's a good friend? A critic. Someone who's going to criticize me. Ezer Kenegdo. And when you get married, Ezer Kenegdo, you help your spouse by being Kenegdo. That's what it means. Ezer Kenegdo. You're Ozer when you will be willing to go against the person. Okay. That's a good friend. Now, this one I for sure don't understand. The Beretz Yisrael said, again, this is Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua was the one, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai praises, Ashrei Yoledeto, blesses his mother. When you see Rabbi Yoshua, say, you know what? What an amazing mother he had. He brought him up the way he is. It's a beautiful, beautiful statement. The greatness of Rabbi Yeshua was his mother. Beautiful. So somehow he said that the Chaver Tov was his mother, the parents. That it's a good friend. That this idea of Chaver Tov goes with Rabbi Yeshua and good mother. Okay, whatever. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi, who was the one to say that you should be a chassid, a pious person, which the commentaries explain to do beyond the law, that we explain, lifnei mishurat hadin. Rabbi Yossi says the Derech Yishara, the straight path that a person should choose, is a shachein tov, like a good neighbor. I'll age myself a little bit, but who remembers the Allstate commercials? You know, like a good neighbor, Allstate is there. So, a shachein tov means a good neighbor. So what's the difference between a good neighbor and a good friend? So today, maybe the difference isn't quite as stark, but in the time of the Mishnah, it was quite stark. The difference is your neighbor is there like 24/7. Like, you can always knock on their door. A good friend, you may see every 2 years, you don't have a phone and you don't have any, a good neighbor is somebody who you can rely on. And here it's not so much for Musar. That's interesting. Okay, the way the commentaries explain it. It means somebody who will, you run out of eggs and you need eggs. You're in the middle of a baking. So you go next door to your neighbor and you get a dozen eggs. It's someone who will lend a helping hand. Not so much morally. I think they're talking about more the physical aspect. Somebody who's willing to spend money. Your car broke down. Okay, maybe not. Your horse broke down. So you can borrow their horse, whatever the case may be. But it's interesting. The Mishnah distinguishes between a good neighbor and a good friend. And we know very often people are not such good friends with their neighbors. Good fences make good neighbors, or whatever that expression is. But it is important to have a good neighbor who you'll help. That's meaning a shachen tov. It's interesting, the word for God, the shchinah, divine presence, is come from this, the same word, a shachen and shchinah. I just find that very interesting, that God is sort of always there for us. Unlike a good friend. Now, it's interesting, the word for a friend, a chaber is from the word of chibur, to tie together. A sentence is a mishpat, the paragraph, a chibur is the joining together. So a chaber is somebody you join together with, but you choose to, whenever. A shachain is there all the time, just like God's presence, the Shekhinah. Why they're related, that those two words of the same source. So there is a difference between a chaber tov and a shachein tov. Okay, and then the Tiferet Yisrael said that ties into being a chassid. You don't have to give your neighbor a dozen eggs. when he runs out of eggs. But that's doing the nimishur and Dean. That's being very wise to help. He's not your best friend, but if your neighbor needs something, you let them. You let them do it. We've mentioned, I think, the classic case. The Ramban said that when the Ramban on that verse Vasita Yashar Batov talks about Lifnei Mishur Adin, he mentioned the case of Bar Mitzvah. We mentioned this a few weeks ago. The law that people today in the business world find they think this is insane. That when you sell your piece of property, you have to offer it to your neighbor first at the same price. In other words, your neighbor has the right of first refusal to match your best price. You can't charge him $200,000 more because obviously to your neighbor, if he wants to expand his house and he can get the next door house, that's worth a lot more money. He'll pay a premium. So Livni Mishur Adin says you're not allowed to charge a premium. That's the case the Ramban gives to describe what the Torah means, Vasita Yashar Vatov, that not to charge your neighbor more, even though he's totally willing to pay, there's nothing illegal. That's what it's Livni Mishur Adin. So the Livni Mishur Adin, you're spending more money. A chassid, a shachein tov, you have to be a good neighbor and sell your house to your neighbor for $200,000 less than I can sell it on the market. So that ties into Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi says, be a chassid. And then he says, be a good neighbor. That I think the tie-in's a lot clearer than the one on the mother and the being a good friend. Okay. Number four, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon then said, be a yerechet, be somebody who fears sin. That's his character trait. So what is his derech yisharah? Haro'ed hanolad, it's sort of a funny thing. Who sees what will be born? Who sees the future? Not the future, that's only prophets, only fools today are prophets. He will see what will come. In other words, he has a long-term vision. He thinks beyond the quarterly report, right? He's not worried what the shareholders at the next quarter. He has a five-year vision, right? Haro'ed hanolad, he'll see what will, the long-term implication. Boy, do we knew that today. He doesn't think on a short-term basis. He thinks on a long. Haroet hanolad. He sees the future. What will be? Again, the Tiferet Yisrael says that. What does that mean? Tying into a yerechet, one who feared sin, is the idea that he puts. He sees that A will lead to B. You know, he sees. You know, if I take this action today, blah blah blah, and a year from now, and 5 years from now, this is very likely to happen. So he puts fences. He puts a siyag to our Torah. He puts fences so that he's very afraid of what will be in the future, so he doesn't even do it now. So that's what he compares to a Yerechet, a Roed Hanolad, somebody who takes a long-term view. Very interesting. The most important path, remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is asking you, what's the most important thing in life? So one said, don't be jealous, have a good eye, look at people in a nice way. One says, be there to rebuke get a friend who'll tell you off, who'll tell you when you're doing something wrong, and take his criticism. Don't get upset, like normally people do get upset. No, have a chaverta. One says, a good neighbor, help, give a helping hand. You don't really like your neighbor, but I'm going to help him anyways, even if it costs me a lot of money. And Rabbi Shimon says, the most important trait is to have long-term planning, to think for the future, think of the what will come today. And then Rav Elazar, who was the Mayan HaMikaber, the overflowing water of the well that keeps giving new and new, that Abba Shoal said, that it was a debate, that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said if he would be outweigh every other rabbi in the world on the path. And he says, of course, a lev tov, a good heart. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai has the famous comment, Ro'eh ani et divrei ben Elazar, he's right, I see him. A good heart is everything. Because a good heart includes everything. A good heart includes a good eye and a good friend and a good neighbor and seeing the future. A good heart. We know when we say Rahmana Libabai, the merciful one, even the word is the word for God, right? We have different expressions for God at different times. A mourner, so the mourner, we say Hamakom, God is the place. Because a mourner is very distant from God. So we don't really know where he is. The God is somewhere, he's in the place. He's not really close to us. So to a mourner, Hamakom, you know, we cannot feel him. It's impersonal. Rahmana is very close, the merciful one, the one who's so kind to us, so careful. That's a Rahmana Libabai. God just wants our heart. That's the most important. Of course, you can take that. Lots of people took that to an extreme. Otherwise, I don't have to keep all the mitzvot as long as I have a good heart. So that's not what our sages meant. But it's more important to have a good heart and not to keep the mitzvot than to keep the mitzvot and not have a good heart, right? If you don't have a good heart, the goal of the mitzvot is to get you to have a good heart. So, Okay, so here we understand the heart is the seat of all emotions. It's what guides us, and we know, of course, on a physical level, the heart. You know, if you want to compare the physical and the spiritual, the importance of the heart. But the Bartonur here has a fascinating comment that I was actually quite startled when I saw it. It doesn't sound so startling on the surface, but the Bartonur says, "Hu amakom shemimenu noveya kol hapulot." The heart is the place. Our source, the makor, the source shemimenu noveya, that everything springs forth, right? It springs forth, the mayan hamitaber, kol hapulot, all actions stem from the heart. So what the Bartonura seems to be saying is that when a person has a good heart, he will lead him to have good action. In other words, what the primary thing is to have a feeling of closeness and concern, and that will lead to action. So the reason I found it so rather startling is, A, I don't think it's true. I'll explain what I mean in a minute. Because the Sefer HaChinuch, the entire book of the Sefer HaChinuch says the exact opposite. I'll explain in a minute. I don't know the last time I mentioned Sefer HaChinuch here, but I think the Sefer HaChinuch is the best introductory work to Judaism ever written. In the history of the Jewish people. It was written in the 13th century. It is the most beautiful book. And I've said always, it should be on every high school curriculum of every Jewish day school, that when the kids graduate high school, they should have gone through the entire Sefer HaChinuch. It's about 600 pages in easy Hebrew. Book is translated into English. The Sefer HaChinuch was written, many of you know, I'm sure, some may not know, was written by, it's anonymously written. They're unclear who wrote it. They used to think Rav Aaron Halevi of Barcelona wrote it, I believe, a student of the Rashba. Now scholars think he didn't write it. I don't know if they know. It was written anonymously from a father to a son. The son, this is Spain, the medieval ages, philosophy, you know, in the generation after the Rambam, where the youth were attracted to philosophical speculation, and that had a great hold on people. That's why the Rambam had to write the more Nebuchim. So this father wrote to his son, it wasn't so religious, and the son thought, Judaism, that's old-fashioned, that's not with the times, you know, modern philosophy, that's tells us how to live our life. Not Judaism. So he wrote a book to his son, and he says, "Listen, my son, Shema Bini," like he's writing to his son, and he writes through, he goes through the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, and for each one of the mitzvot, he gives him a little bit of what the mitzvah is, and then he explains the sort of the philosophical basis, what he calls the tamei hamitzvot, the you know, taste of the mitzvah. What's the reason for the mitzvah? We know it's all speculation. We don't know usually the reason. And he gives all kinds of reasons. The classic book explains a little bit of the mitzvah. If you read Sefer HaChinuch, you can pass for a Torah scholar. It's a great shortcut. Like if you don't want to spend years studying, you know, in yeshiva, it's hard work. You want to pretend you're like a real big scholar, read the Sefer HaChinuch, you'll know a little about everything there is to know in Judaism. Because he discusses the entire, you know, obviously you're not going to know about artificial insemination, and halacha, it's a broad overview of all 613 mitzvot, every mitzvah, one or two pages. So why am I telling you the background? Even people know, because it's important. It's a phenomenal book. Anyway, so the Sefer HaChinuch has one basic principle that runs through the entire book. I mean, and he mentioned many times, that's acharei acharei ha-pu'ulot nimshachot ha-levavot. After the, by the action determines our heart. In other words, it's not the heart that motivates actions, it's actions that motivate our heart. In other words, we don't do good because we like people. We like people because we do good for them. In other words, the whole principle of Sefer HaChinuch is the reason for the mitzvot is because actions mold character. Maybe that's another way to phrase it. Actions, not character, doesn't determine actions. Actions determine character. When you act in a certain way, you become that. If you begin, you don't care about people. You want to give, you know, charity, but you're forced to. Your business partners and people, you know, and community pressure. So you give a lot of charity. Eventually, you become a charitable person. It will influence you, and we all know that when you give charity, you give $1 million to an institution, you're going to care about that institution more. Because why am I giving $1 million? Well, this is basically the theory. What this Sefer HaChinuch is developing here is the theory of cognitive dissonance developed in the 19th century and 20th century, I think, by Leon Leon Thesinger, I think, was the one from Harvard University, I believe, who came up with the theory that cognitive dissonance, that the human being doesn't like tension between how we act and how we think. It's not good to, why am I nice to somebody I don't like? Or why am I mean to somebody I do like? That creates like tension. So the human mind works to lower that tension. That's cognitive dissonance. And we lower that tension by changing how we think, not changing what we do. This I use in this explanation all the time, a terrible thing, but it's true. Many of the Nazis, it's actually a scary thing, but I think it's very true. Many of the Nazis were not inherently evil. They were caught up in an environment. They weren't good. Don't get me wrong. God forbid. They did evil things, but they were caught up in an environment, and that's what they did. And everybody did it, and it influences you, and you act in a certain way. You begin. They moved to Canada, you know, and now not so much. Not so many left, you know. But they would get arrested, and their neighbor, you know, for what they did 40 years ago in Auschwitz or somewhere. And their neighbors, I can't believe it. He tended his garden so nice for 40 years. He was the most nice neighbor, but I can't believe he has a Nazi past. It's not a contradiction. You put yourself in a different environment where people act differently, you become a different person. The way you act, that's why the Sefer HaChinuch says there's so many mitzvot in the Torah. This basic theme of the book is the Torah says, do this, do this, do that, because we want to develop our character. The key is the character. The key is the Lev Tov. But the way to get to that Lev Tov, Acharei HaPe'ulot Nimshachot HaLevavot. Depending on the actions, that's how your heart will be. So when I read this statement of the Bartanura, that the heart is the Makor, mission of vehicle, it's from the heart that comes all the action. Maybe you can say it's not exactly a contradiction. He just means that the heart is, you know, what will motivate us. But I don't know, but I just found it, to me, that's what popped into my mind. Yes, the heart is key, but the way to develop the heart is to act. And that's, like I say, that is the action. And that's like, I'll take it, look at in the Ten Commandments. Don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't lie, don't talk negatively. And only afterwards, don't be jealous. It's not that, okay, if I won't be jealous of you, I won't lie to you. No, that ain't going to work. First, you have to treat the person, don't lie about the person, don't steal from them. Then maybe you can reach the level of Lo Tachmod. And that's what, and everybody knows, that's the hardest of the Ten Commandments. Keeping Shabbos is easy, beautiful. How many people kill? Not easy to keep, relatively. Adultery might be a little harder to keep, but it's all still, thank God, it's not so hard to keep. And for most people, and don't steal. Most people don't steal. Great, beautiful. Lying's a little bit harder than not to lie. That never tell a lie. Midvar shikr tirchak, but that's harder. Lo tachmod, that's a tough one. And I mentioned this not here, but if you actually look in the Ten Commandments, I gave a shiur about this, I think, a while ago, not in this series. If you look in the Ten Commandments, they're actually, if I didn't know anything and I just looked at the Chumash, you know, there are parsha breaks in the Chumash. Everybody knows, you know, based in the Torah where there are breaks, there's a samach, and then, you have it like here. You see this line in the middle, if you can see it, you know, to the end of the line there. So if you look in the Ten Commandments, there obviously are going to be 10 breaks. Each one of the commandments is going to have a break. That's very nice, except the problem is the first break is after Anochi and Lo Yelecha don't have a break. There's no partial break. If you're reading the Ten Commandments in the Torah, it sounds like the first two are really one. What we call the first two is one. It's written as one Dibra, and where there were commentaries, you said it's not a mitzvah. Anochi isn't the commandment, it's a statement. It's the introduction to the Ten Commandments. Why do you have to listen to what God says? The Aseret Dibro, whatever. I'm the Lord your God. Now, since I'm Lord your God, Lo Yalei Mechamim Alpanai, don't have other gods, don't take my name in vain, keep Shabbos, etc., etc. No, that leaves us with only 9 commandments. So if you look at the end, Lo Tachmod is 2. It's unbelievable. I don't know if you can see in the top of the page, Lo Tachmod. There's a break, and then it says Lo Tachmod again. Lo Tachmod, don't believe me. Open up your own Chumash. I mean, you can believe me, but Lo Tachmod Beit Reacha, comma, stop. Don't be jealous of their house. Lo Tachmod Eish Reacha, don't be jealous of their wife. Vavdova, Matova, Sharo. So the Torah itself puts Lo Tachmod as 2 of the 10 commandments, almost. It's a whole, have to develop this further another time. And this is a fascinating idea, because Lo Tachmod, it's really hard, because the way to get to a good heart, you got to act a lot. Character cannot be developed in a vacuum. Or to give another example, why do we fast on Yom Kippur? You know what the Gemara says, why we fast on Yom Kippur? Anybody want to say, speak up, you can unmute yourself. Why do we fast on Yom Kippur? So you're going to tell me, that's all very nice, good. But what the Gemara says, what's the ultimate purpose of fasting on Yom Kippur? So the Gemara says, Agra Tanita, the reward for a fast is staka, to give charity. The goal of fasting is to develop our sensitivity to others. Because if everybody knows there are a billion people in the world who go to bed hungry, right? But if you're not hungry, you don't think about them too much. But when you're hungry, you feel the pain of other people. That's why it's important to have the minister of finance should be somebody who's middle class or lower. You don't want a rich person as a minister of finance. You need people in government who are poor. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way anymore. But because if the people are detached, you can't feel the pain of other people until you experience. It's kind of a continuation. Don't judge somebody until you're in their place. So the Talmud says, if asking Yom Kippur, that's okay, big deal. But the fasting, Vayihimi Macharat, twice the Torah says Vayihimi Macharat, it was on the next day, and the rabbis say it was the day after Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not so important. What's important is the day after Yom Kippur. The fasting is not the end of itself. Who cares? That's not the goal. The goal is to develop our heart, have a lev tov. The way we develop our caring is by being hungry for a day. You don't eat or drink for 25 hours. It reminds you, I better help the poor more. So that's what it says. And I'm not making this up. It's not like some humanist, whatever, revisionist. This is traditional Judaism in its greatest form, that the reward for a fast day is to give charity. So I just find it interesting. I don't know if the Bartanur, by the way, lived after the Sefer HaChinuch, a couple hundred years later. The Sefer HaChinuch is 13th century, Bartanur is 15th century, whatever. But I don't know if he exactly is disagreeing with him. He's just, in this Mishnah, Lev Tov, it's the Makor Shemenu, call the place that everything good emanates from. But the way to get that everything good is by acting. Okay, I just a little bit. I'll give one other example. It's a beautiful example how actions are so important. There's a, I don't know if I mentioned this once before, you can let me know. The law is you have to help a person load and unload their animals, donkey, right? And the halacha is you have to help somebody unload before you help them load, because you want to concern for the care of the animals. Animals, we have to be concerned, not as much as about humans. So we're allowed to put a load on the animal, but not too heavy. But when it comes to loading or unloading, there are two people. One needs help loading, one needs help unloading. So you help the person unload first. You want to get the burden off the animal. Good, very nice. That's a lot in the Torah. That's what commentaries understand. However, there is an exception. What if the person who's unloading the animal is your best friend, and the person who's loading his animal, you hate his guts? So the halacha is you have to help the person load the animal first. You hate his guts. Doesn't make any sense. You always help unload the animal first. How much more so if it's your best friend? That's exactly the point. We don't want you to hate this guy. The only way... So it's more important, well, let the animal suffer a little bit more, but it's more important that you help the person you don't like before the person you do like, because we want to get rid of the hatred. And that's totally saying, if you help somebody, how can I hate you if I help you? I can't. So Torah says, and remember it says, Torah, ki tireh shor oivecha, if you see the ox of your, I think that's the expression, you see the ox of your enemy that's lost. The Torah phrases it, it's a person you don't like, that's the person you want to help the most, because when you help him, you'll begin to like him. There'll be a dual role here. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, we'll do this quickly. The commentary say, why do you need this? Isn't it the opposite? Amar lehem tzur reji derech ra'ah, sheitrachek min adam. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, okay, now that's great. The path, the straight path you should take. What's the path you shouldn't take? Derech ra'ah, that you have to run away from. So it's always going to be the opposite of everyone, right? So the commentators say it's not always. Sometimes the opposites are not exactly true. Like, for example, likni mishurat hadin, to do good. The opposite of that is not bad. Not bad, you're not doing anything. You're just not doing good. In other words, the opposite isn't always bad, but you'll see it's mainly the opposites. Rabbi Lezermer, ayin ra'ah. The worst thing to have is a bad eye. The first thing is best thing's a good eye not to be jealous. The worst thing is to be jealous. Rav Yeshua Yoshumer Achavera. Now, Achavera, of course, doesn't make any sense. Why would you be his friend? So this already tells you Achavera is not the people you like and you dislike. Achavera, if you don't like him, he's not your friend. Means a friend who doesn't give you any rebuke. In other words, a chaver tov gives you rebuke. You can have a friend. We all know a friend, he takes you out to the bars and drinking and drugs. And right, that's the greatest influence on teenagers, especially, is their friends. They get in with the wrong group of friends. Oy vai voy. So a chaver ra is the worst thing. Obviously, you like the person. It just means he's bad for you. Not that Rav Yossi Umer a shachein ra. It's pretty awful to live when you don't get along with your neighbors. You see them every day. And, you know, they make noise, and you know that's the famous story of Rav Meir and Bruria, right? Rav Meir had neighbors; they were making noise at 3 a.m. He prayed they should actually die, right? That's what it says in the Gemara. God should have mercy on them and kill them. That's what it says in the Gemara. I just wrote an article about it. Maybe one day you'll see it, but now it's for later. Rav Meir said to his wife, "They God should have mercy these terrible people." And that's when Bruria said to him, "Yitamu chatai minar." It's not chotim. We pray that sinners should cease from the land, not sins. Yitamu chatai minar. And Rav Meir turned his advice, right? But having a shachein ra can be a pretty bad experience. We all the people can move. Rabbi Shimon Omer. So this is fascinating. Haloveh ve'no meshalim. Fascinating. So crucial today. Rabbi Shimon said the most important trait is long-term planning. Haroyat anolat. You'll see what will be. So what's the worst trait? Is to borrow money you can't pay back. Go into debt today that you can't pay in the future. Haroyat anolat. Think for the future. So the worst trait is when somebody is in over their heads. They buy a house they can't afford. They lose their job in COVID, or their business is in trouble, and they lose their house. They're in big, big trouble. Never, they bite off too much, they can live. Hello, bebe, no Michelin. You borrow money that you can't pay. Unbelievable. This is the worst trait. What's the derech ra'ah, sheitrachek mimenu adam, is to borrow money and not to pay back. Wow. And then this is the only one. The Mishnah like quotes a verse about, like the Mishnah gets all excited about this. Whether you borrow from a person, borrow money from a human being, it's like you borrow from God. Wow. If you can't pay back, you mean that you're sinning against God. No other of these things has a whole verse, a whole commentary. An evil borrower. Lover Rasha. They know the lo yishalem. An evil borrower does not pay the tzaddik, but a righteous person chonem benotein. A righteous person gives. A righteous person is merciful and gives. Unbelievable. So the key already, the editors of the Mishnah thought this was a really important message. They don't give you verses to quote ayin tov and chaver tov. Just by lo ve beino mishalem, they quote a verse. Maybe you can say because people don't take it seriously. In other words, right? You, in other words, if it's obvious, you don't have to quote a verse. It's the other side of it. In other words, they are both true. Sometimes you have to quote a verse because you have to strengthen. It's important. Yeah, what's so big deal? I'll pay later. I have a big credit card. All right, I'll pay it off eventually. Interest rates are low, whatever. So no, so the Mishnah wants to tell us, Lovev Rasha, that's evil, not to pay. Rabbi Elazar Omer, of course, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Levra, a bad heart. Marlam ro'eh ani at divrei Elazar ben Arach. I see, again, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, he's got it. He hit the nail on the head. Sheh b'chlav v'rav divrechem. Again, the heart is the root of everything, and a bad heart will lead to all kinds of terrible things. Okay, any questions? I see there are questions in the chat box. I'll get to them in a couple of minutes. Just let me start the next Mishnah. Mishnah Yod, Hey Mamru Shlosha Dvarim. That was sort of a too long Mishnah Yod. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai introducing his five students. Remember, till the end of the second chapter, Perkei Avot is a history of the transmission of the oral Torah from generation to generation. Begins with the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Yeah, so it introduces that Moshe got the Torah, Yeshua's gaining Bima. Okay, that's all in the written Torah. We don't have to talk about that. Open up a Tanakh, come to our Tanakh classes that we're having now Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. And then Perkei Avot introduces us to the oral law. Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, beginning of the Second Temple period. And then it goes through all the way to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, because it goes through the hereditary, the Nisi'im, from Hillel to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, where father, son, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Hashini, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And then it goes back, through the rabbinic transmission. In other words, from Hillel, instead of going to his son, Rabbi Gamliel, who is the Nasi, it goes to his top students, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And then we're doing Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's five students. Until the end of the second paragraph, each one will then say a comment, each one of these five students. And then in Perek Gimel, chapter 3 of Perek Avot, we stop that whole cycle. Akavya ben Mahalal Omer. Beautiful, we'll get to him. Akavya ben Mahalal, we're now back in the second temple. In other words, it's the first two chapters are sort of the history of the transmission of our Masorah. So now, the Mishnah is going to quote the three famous, teaching of each of these five great students of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Mishnah Yud, Hamer Mu Shlosha Dvar, Rabbi Lezer Meir, Yikavod Chavercha Chaviv Alach Kishalach. The honor of your friend shall be as dear to you as your own honor. Treat your friend at least as well as you treat others. And it's what we said before, the commentaries explain, don't get angry. Don't get angry, because when you get angry, you'll belittle people. But by the way, if you count them, you have a lot of this in the Mishnah. You have the famous one in the Mishnah. There are three crowns: the crown of Torah, the crown of priesthood, Kahuna, the Keter Malchut. Three crowns, and the crown of a good name beats them all. That's there are four crowns, not three crowns, right? Yistakel b'shlosh dvarim, ayin ro'eh, ozen shomat. Although, how does it say? Those are four things. It says three things, and it quotes four. So it's the same thing here. Rabbi Eliezer Amir, Yichavot Chavercha Alav Kishalach. The honor of your friend should be as dear as yours. Al Tinoach Lichos, don't get angry easily. Shuv Yom Achal Livnei Mitatecha, repent one day before you die. And go close to the warmth of the sage. Well, those are four things, not three things. Then it expands to the last thing. So the commentators explain, the first two are one. The honor of my friend should be dearest to me. That's and don't get angry is one thing. When you're when you honor your friend, you don't get angry at them. You don't get angry. So it's those are not two things. And like I mentioned, Moshe Rabbeinu, according to many of the commentaries, did not go to Israel, not because he hit the rock, but rather because he got angry at the people. Okay, then it says, Shuv Yomatcha Livnei Mitatecha, repent one day before you die. So the question is, what does this mean exactly? So the classic interpretation is, do tshuva every day, because you never know when you're going to die. In other words, you never know when you're going to die, so you better do tshuva every day. Repent one day before you die. So that's true, although I don't know that that's, he may really mean it in a certain sense. In other words, that's not totally true either, because in other words, Yaakov Avinu was the first person to get sick in the Chumash, right? Nobody got, I'm not saying people didn't get sick, but the Torah doesn't record anybody getting sick till Yaakov Avinu, right? He's the first one we know who gets sick. And therefore, the Medrash picks up on this. They do careful reading, and they say Yaakov Avinu prayed that he should get sick, because everybody else, that's the famous minag, the idea everybody else would sneeze and die. So that's why when a person sneezes, they should be well, because sneezing used to mean you would die. You were healthy and then you would sneeze and you would die. That's how the magic is. I don't know if it means it literally. So Yaakov Avinu said, I want to prepare before I die. I don't just want to die all of a sudden. I need time to put my matters in order. I want to bless my children. And I mentioned this before. Yitzchak says to Esav, I want to bless you. I'm about to die. So Yitzchak lived, I believe, another 55 years. I have to do the calculation again. Yitzchak did this way before Yaakov goes to Laban. Remember, when Yaakov comes back after being in Laban's already, Yitzchak is still alive. And yet before he goes, and then he tells him, so he had no idea when he was going to die. So Yaakov Avinu knew he was going to die. and therefore he prepared. So I don't know exactly. I mean, it's a nice thing to say, repent every day. It's true. And of course, people do die unexpectedly, unfortunately. But on the other hand, it also means get your life in order. In other words, before you die, prepare. And that's what Yaakov Avinu prayed for. And that's what God granted him, that wish. God granted him that wish, and therefore he could bless his children. Moshe Rabbeinu also knew he was going to die. God gave him 5 weeks' notice. That's what Sefer Dvarim is all about. Moshe Rabbeinu had 5 weeks' notice he was going to die. He pleaded and pleaded and pleaded, and God said, enough, and Hanan, Moshe, I don't want to hear from you anymore. You know, you can ask, it's over, game's over. Here's your last 5 weeks, and then Moshe spends his last week preparing, and therefore he also can bless everybody. I don't know if Miriam and Aaron, I mean, it said, we read last week, Moshe took Aaron up to Har, but I don't know how much notice he had he was going to die. Whatever, Miriam dies, but they come to in Kadesh, but how much are Miriam, and Miriam dies? I don't know. Did she know she was going to die? We don't know. Anyway, so Shum Yomadcha Livnei Mitatecha, that one day before you die, you should repent, and then I'll just introduce the next comment, and please God, we'll pick up next week. Bevi Mitchamim Kenegot Aron Shel Chachamim, warm up against the light or the fire of the Chachamim. So I'll just say one sort of interesting idea. Fire has two functions, light, it depends how you call it, whatever, light, fire, right? So it allows you to see and it gives heat, right? You can see in the dark and gives heat. What's the difference? It allows you to see, you can be hundreds of yards away. To give heat, you gotta be right near the fire. So, Hevi Michamim Kineger Oran Shel Chachamim. You have to get close to Chachamim, not just hear their wisdom from afar, which is one thing, but if you want to get warm, Hevi Michamim, it's one thing to learn from learning, you can read their books, you can learn from afar. To get warm from a sage, you got to be close to the sage. And that's what the commentaries explain. As we've mentioned many times, the Talmud says, Gadol Shimusha Yoter Milimudah. It's more important, it's greater to interact with the Torah scholar, to service him, to drive him to the airport, to take him shopping, to schmooze with him at a meal, than to learn. Learning is formal education. We know informal education is more important. The shimush, or the servicing, is greater. So that you have v'mitchamim, the or, there's the light, but there's the heat. You have to have both. Okay, just let me do a very quick review, and then I'll take a look at any questions. So we discussed the traits the person is supposed to have, five different traits, and we have this whole story on Moshe Rabbeinu, this unbelievable story that the Tiferet Yisroel quotes, that Moshe was a very angry, evil, terrible person. He admits about himself. He just worked hard because good and evil go together. The greater, they're like Newton's third law, the greater the potential for evil, the greater the potential for good, and vice versa. Person who can't do evil can't do a lot of good. Human beings can do tremendous evil, and therefore great good. And Torah can do tremendous good, but people can misuse it and do tremendous this harm. We discussed a good friend, a good neighbor, what's the difference between a friend and a neighbor, thinking of the future, roet hanolad, long-term thinking, therefore not borrowing and paying back, how important, and they have a good heart. Then the discussion is it the heart that determines how we act, or really the Sefer HaChinuch, the whole idea, our actions will determine our heart more than our heart determines our actions, and then discuss a little bit the honor of our friend. Okay, so I want to thank everybody. Just let me quickly go through the questions on the chat box. Okay, a good eye is freedom from envy, correct? What we discussed. Please share the story about Moshe Rabbeinu. I think I did. I hope I did. Safaria is great, correct? Safaria is unbelievable. I imagine people are aware of Safaria. If you aren't, go there. It's spelled not PH. I think it's spelled with an F, I think. But I'm sure you can get to the website. More and more, totally free. I think it was, I know it was two non-observant Jews, I think, have worked at Google. They were like whiz, you know, tech whiz kids. I think made a lot of money at a very young age. And they decided that they want to give the world of Jewish, like text to the whole world. And they made it their mission to provide free Jewish text. It's an unbelievable site. Anyways, okay. Gutenberg didn't invent the printing press. He invented movable type. Thank you. Okay. We were in the Gutenberg Museum on our trip to Germany a few years ago in Mainz is where the Gutenberg, and you see the original Bibles that they printed the beautiful Bibles correct. Printing possible. Thank you for that correction. Anger equals tunnel vision. Correct. You don't see straight. Maybe that's why you lose your memory. A good neighbor, a sympathy. Okay. Our neighbor's kids showed us the baby tomatoes in our gardens. That's being a good neighbor. Very good. Okay. Heart equals intellect, not emotions. I don't know. Somebody wrote me privately. The heart is emotion. Maybe it's also intellect. The brain is more intellect. I'm not sure. If you have anything you want to follow up with me, that's fine. That's why Tommy Douglas was compassionate, good Canadians here, and became the father of Canadian universal healthcare. Correct. A person who, if you become the head of healthcare, you'll become a compassionate person. I don't know. I mean, Tommy Douglas before my time, but that's correct. He's one who got, I guess, what we call OIP today, who I think he was the NDP premier of Saskatchewan. Correct. I don't want to embarrass myself if I'm wrong, but I think that's who he was before my time a little bit. But he was the one who got national healthcare, something they sorely need in the United States. And we for sure see now, but it is hard to believe that an advanced country wouldn't have free healthcare for everybody. But anyways, that's another story. This is why the Jews are forced into usury. I don't know what you mean by is this why the Jews. Jews were forced into usury because they couldn't own land. That's the main reason, I believe. They were forced, and the Torah does allow you to charge interest to a non-Jew in theory. The Shulchan Aruch recommends you don't charge interest to a non-Jew. Fascinating. It's better don't charge interest to non-Jew. You're allowed to. You shouldn't do it. That's what I think at the beginning of Yoredea, there he writes. We today, of course, do charge interest to other Jews too. I mean, we don't call it interest. Otherwise, it's not. Well, we heteriska, whatever. But functionally, and we need it. Fine, this is loopholes. That's a whole other shear. When do we allow legal loopholes? We couldn't live without interest. The economy would fall apart. We need interest. So the rabbis developed a system how to charge interest. It's not, you have to be a little careful. So today we charge interest to everybody. But there was a time there was a distinction between Jew and non-Jew. Yes, so what Lauren's writing, he was from a poor home. That's why Tommy Douglas can pass about the very good. I think that's the point I mentioned. We, listen, the Talmud says the Kohen Gadol, I believe the Kohen Gadol and Melech have to be wealthy. That's, I believe both, but for sure the Melech has to be wealthy. Lo yar below, can't have too much wealth, but he has to have some, because if he doesn't have wealth, people don't respect people without money. It's a tragedy, but that's life. So if our leaders are all poor, they won't be respected. But I agree, we need a cross-section. We for sure need poor leaders. The problem is it's so hard, but yes, that's an excellent point. I did not know that Tommy Douglas came from a poor home. Maybe other people come passionate by heading healthcare, but not in this. Yeah, well, you live in the United States, Martha, so it's a different administration than we have here. But yeah, it's a little bit scary. I give these little comments all the time, but I don't know. We're really seeing the lack of leadership. I mentioned before, but this all end, you know, v'chol mishoski mitzarchei tzibur b'emunah. I don't think I mentioned it recently. People who are in leadership position must act, be purely motivated. Normally, a person does not have to be purely motivated. We do mitzvot because it's the right thing to do. We talk shalom, lishma, balishma. Who cares what the reason is? Obviously, it's good to be properly motivated, but it doesn't matter so much. We talk shalom, lishma, balishma, very famous. Lolam, you should always do mitzvot. Who cares why you do what's right? It's different with leaders. Leaders don't have that. Leaders, v'chol mi shoskim mitzarchei tzibur, be emunah. Leaders must do it with faith because, as we explained, every decision, even the best decision a leader makes, hurts people. It's impossible. That's the way leadership is. It's impossible to take a decision. You want more money for education. Beautiful. But that has to come from somewhere. It's going to come somewhere else. So leaders always are hurting people. That's what it means to be a great leader. It's okay. But if you're doing it for your political motives, and that's oy vey voy, then you're a real sinner. That's why it's so important. That's why only the best, more, you know, when I was younger, I used to think, who cares? I want the president of the United States, let's say. I just want him to be good in the economy, and who cares about his personal life? And now I am totally the opposite. 99% of what I care about in the Prime Minister of Canada and the Prime Minister of Israel and President of the United States is their moral character. Maybe 1% their views on the economy. That's all, doesn't matter, almost. But if you have a moral person in office, you're in good shape, or moral people to aspire. Unfortunately, I think we're very far from that. But anyways, that's, you know, we're after 10:30, so I can be more free in my political views. You don't have to agree with any of them. But yeah, leaders should be poor. Kings must be rich. Yeah, we need a combination of both. I don't think every leader has to be poor. You want leaders to also be wealthy, because, you know, that's the famous story. One of the Rebbeim told the very well person he should eat very fancy, because if he eats not so fancy, well, if I only have this, then the poor meat need much less. In other words, if I'm a multi-billionaire and live in a 2,000 square foot home, so why should the poor complain they live in a half? But if you live in a 10,000 square foot home, then you'll understand other people have to live in a 2,000 square foot home. So sometimes there is value in seeing wealth. But yes, I agree. Faye, I don't know what you mean that Tommy was Don's father-in-law. I'm not sure who Don is, but I assume that means you had a connection somehow. Anyway, I want to thank you all for coming. Have a wonderful day, wonderful week. Shabbat Shalom. This Monday, we'll continue Tanakh. The series, really, I think they're amazing. Those of you who have been, the overview of Tanakh, all of them being one better than the next. This Monday, Rebecca Winter-Gottlieb, who actually grew up in Toronto, I know her very well. She's a wonderful, wonderful teacher, wonderful person, and now lives in Houston. Or I think she's in Atlanta now, whatever, but she'll be doing on Shop Team, so I invite everybody to come for that and for all our classes, and we look forward to seeing you and more learning opportunities, and thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.